We come to this place for magic. We come to the Blatcast to laugh, to cry, occasionally be revolted, to pretend that you care. Because we need that, all of us. That indescribable feeling we get when the sound begins to prematurely dim, preserving that sacred runtime that is always measured in full minutes. And we go somewhere we've never been before. Not just entertained, but somehow reborn. Together. From musician interviews and unique movie reactions to stories about getting tossed off the Groove Cruise and rescued by the Canadian CIA. Dazzling conversation on tiny earbuds that repeatedly fall out, or a huge pair of Beats by Dre that never fit, but you spent $200 on them, so you wear them anyway. Sound we all can feel. Somehow, heartbreak feels good in a place like this. Our hosts feel like the best part of us, and stories feel perfect and powerful. If you feel like you're part of the episode, it's because here, you are. The Blatcast. We make podcasts better.
This is the Blatcast, an occasionally fast-paced but usually laborious and ponderous look at the world, hosted by Christian Blatt. Returning to the show today is comedian Don Jameson. Now, here's Christian Blatt.
Welcome to the Blattcast. It's been a while, but we're back in style. Now we're back for more with the great Don Jameson, the number one on the comedy charts. Don Jameson, thank you for being here on the Blattcast again.
Well, I don't like to brag, but it's Blattastic to be here, and it was Blattastic to debut at number one for all 38 seconds that I was up there.
it was, hey, look, they can never take that away from you. You'll have entered the charts at number one.
No, somehow the business will figure out how to take it away from me, as they've done every other good thing in my career.
Right. That's exactly the case. And I know that you don't like to brag, Don, but somehow, even though you don't like to brag, you did make sure that I was able to share with everyone, and it's in the YouTube description for our visual audience, where you can get that sweet-looking vinyl for No Sleep Till McSorley's, the two different colors of both shades of ale. I'm sure that... I was going to say you're getting tired of explaining it, but you are talking about one of your favorite places on earth, McSorley's. Now, I know McSorley's, but perhaps there are those in our audience who don't. So tell the story that I've heard you tell a couple of times. You told it on my show, Who Are These Broadcasters, that I do with Eric Zane, over on the Who Are These Podcasts YouTube channel. But I like the way that it unfolded, as so many things do, over a pint or seven of McSorley's.
I was sitting in McSorley's Ale House having a pint or seven, as you've alluded to. Of course, if you took the over on the seven pints, you would have made a lot more money than Christian did. Seven is just like, you know, that's just getting warmed up at McSorley's.
I mean, you haven't even sat down by the time you've had seven. You know, you're still like waiting for a table, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, but that's the kind of place it is. You go there. We prefer to day drink there. Some people, you know, like to be hacky and go at night. That's fine, yeah, too. But look, established 1854. You can see it right up there. So if you haven't been there before, this is the delicious ale that they serve, a light and then dark. Please don't ask them for a Coke or a glass of Chardonnay, yeah, or a whiskey sour, because you will be out the door quicker than you came in.
And definitely don't ask for a White Claw. I mean, that's kind of the standard operating procedure at any respectable house of barkeep. But I think that You know, it's really, it's just the ale. And this photo that I'm sharing is actually from my my iPhone. This is from about a year ago when I was there. And I went with a friend of mine who I made the mistake of going with a friend who happens to be a woman. And I drank twice as much as I normally do because we didn't want to lose the table, and she was drinking very slowly. And I was going to say it's unfortunate. The great David Brody in the chat asking if you could get a Cosmo or an Appletini at McSorley's. Do you think that they even know the word Appletini at McSorley's, Don?
Yeah, these are old school Irish guys. You know, you get, they have these gray vests that get handed down through the generations from father to son when they take over. It's all tradition at McSorley's. And of course, you can see why the vinyl is coming in light ale color and dark ale color. So, which I love. But yeah, it's a place where you sit around and they, you know, you could attest to this. If there's 10 seats at the table and you're only taking up two, there's 8 open seats for people who want to drink. And so you're sitting there next to people from all over the world and you're solving the world's problems, which is what I do, of course, on No Sleep Till McSorley's, my comedy album. They'd never done a show there before. But, you know, after, yes, several pints of these. And, yes, you order two at a time. You did it properly. Because they come in those little glass mugs. It just started spitballing, like, okay, you know, where can I do my next album? How about right here at McSorley's? All right. Well, they've never done a show here before, but we're gonna give it a try. We'll ask the owner, and I said, how much to record my album here? How much to rent it out? She said, how long have you been coming here? I said, 30 years. She said, you've paid enough. So. Part one down, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Which, by the way, I spent a lot of time at Shea Stadium back in the day, but I don't think they would have let me record anything there for free. So that's just a testament to the folks at McSorley's.
Shea Stadium is no McSorley's old ale house. Let's be honest, okay?
That's fair.
And it never was, and it never will be. But as you know, since you are a freelance realtor on the side, or as other people on the news call it, a squatter, it's all about location, 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 location. And so once I had that locked in, I knew I wanted to do a Motorhead tribute. So what do? We take their classic album, No Sleep Till Hammersmith, and we make it No Sleep Till McSorley's. Bada bing, bada boom. Couple more pints of ale. Now we're rolling here, folks. What do? I email Motorhead's manager. Could I use the Motorhead font for my new album? Because I've already come up with the title. He writes back, anything you want. Couple more pints. Anything I want. Could I actually Photoshop myself into the original artwork with Lemmy and Filthy and Fast Eddie? And once again, the answer was yes. So now the pints are flowing. I'm feeling cocky. I'm feeling good. I text Phil Campbell, their longtime guitar player. Would you give me the honor of doing the opening guitar solo as I do on every album? I have a different rock or metal guy do that. And Phil said, yes, he answered in the affirmative. And then that was it. Now I just had to write some material.
Right. And that was the hard part, getting it all lined up. And I believe you also needed to reach out to the great Brian Slagle at Metal Blade Records and be like, hey, you know, I don't have a record deal anymore. Can you put this out? So you got more business done in one afternoon of day drinking at McSorley's than I think anyone else had since it opened in 1854.
Because there really is. It's the new, like, it's the new slogan for the, like, the Army. Remember, you know, the Army, we get done more before 9 a.m. than most people do in all day. So yeah. I get more, you know, business negotiations done in an hour at McSorley's than even, you know, most people in a lifetime. The Wolf of Wall Street got nothing on me, baby.
Yes, you're the Jordan Belfort of comedy. You get so much done before other bars are even starting happy hour. You're like, I'm already done, you know, in more ways than one. So I don't want to get too bogged down into the specifics, but I think it's fascinating having been to McSorley's, and you know, it is one of those sawdust on the floor places, that probably because it's been around since 1854. I remember one point they had a really fat cat that lived there, but I don't ask questions, you know. If a pet at an alehouse disappears, you're like, all right, they probably, you know, we're dipping into some of the leftovers, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll just, you know, I don't want to say anything disparaging, but the liverwurst might not be all liverwurst.
Right. Yeah. May or may not, you know, just allegedly. But
and just to clarify the sawdust on the floor, less people think it's not a clean place to go. It's a very clean place. The problem was the broom broke in 1855 and they just haven't gotten around to getting a new one.
It had been so clean for that first year. And it's great. And, you know, it's like one or two blocks over from St. Mark's Place. So when I was first drinking age, that was when you could go and buy all your bootleg CDs at the many records and CD stores that used to be there. Most of them aren't there anymore. The great Sounds and Revolver Records and all those places used to be right over there.
And St. Mark's.
Yeah, all on St. Mark's. So just heading over there was great, McSorley's. And you can definitely get a read on how good of a friend you're going to be with someone if you take them to McSorley's, especially for day drinking. You know, if it's the third stop in a long night, you know, some people might be pretenders to the drinking crown and you'd be like, oh, they can really keep up. But can they do it when the sun's out, Don? That's the real question.
That is the real question. And we got taught a lesson by these lovely gals that we met from Norway one day when we were in their day drinking. And our legs were a little rubbery walking out of there. However, they were only warming up. So that was them just starting out to get warmed up for the night. And we were pouring ourselves into taxis and Ubers. So, you know, shout out to the drinking crew from Norway. You put us to shame in there, you proper drinkers, which you have to be when you go there. And but you're right. Yeah, the neighborhood's lost some character. No more of the, you know, the record stores and the but, of course, there's a beautiful Pinkberry there right on St. Mark's Place. So, you know,
I believe that Pinkberry is where a friend of mine used to go to do a needle exchange. But really, the neighborhood's not what it used to be, Don, as so much of New York is. But talk a little bit about, so like, what's the legitimate capacity for a day of drinking? You know, like if it's full, there has to be some sign posted because the fire marshal probably checks in there pretty regularly to make sure it's not overcrowded. So if there's not a show going on, how many people can fit in there?
Are you kidding? The fire marshal sits and drinks with me. What are you talking about? He's checking the capacity.
Yeah, that's true. I'm sure his last name either starts with a Mick or an O. So either way, yeah, he's there anyway. Yeah,
Mr. O apostrophe drinks with me. It's about 150. Okay. If you pack him in there. So yeah, not a huge place, but again, it was, you know, I was like, I got to do this in front of beer drinkers and hellraisers. And that's really what McSorley's is all about.
Yeah. And so you had about that many people you did it. I kind of remember you doing it in September because I loved this idea. I remember when you were putting it together and I had just been out that way in like June. And I'm like, do I get to ask my wife, like, can I fly there just to spend a weekend at a bar? You know, decided that I would just enjoy the finished product. But speaking of the finished product, it was great because I saw you, you know, a few times. I would do your sadly departed show on Compound Media, that Jameson show. Afterwards, we would go out a couple of times and I saw you get some stage time at whatever that place that Sheba Mason runs. And oh my gosh, I'm remembering now all of a sudden that I saw you in Princeton at a hotel where there was also a prom going on. And neither myself, my friend Dan, who went with me, nor you, none of us ended up in jail that night.
Miraculously, yeah. I've never ended up in jail on any night, which is even more incredible. But generally after a day of drinking at McSorley's, that's always, you know, you're always sort of on the precipice incarceration. But of course, now in New York, after I've spent all my money in McSorley's old ale house, I don't have to worry because it's no cash bail in New York. So, you know, these policies really are helping out the alcoholics in the city, you know, in an indirect way. But you know, listen, I like to do my albums in weirdo places. I did an album in a speakeasy, literally in an illegal club in Los Angeles. I did one, you know, here at the Jersey Shore down by where I live, a little BYOB comedy club, my home comedy club that I love. But, you know, middle of the summer, people just coming off the beach with wheeling in coolers, you know, of beer and Zimas and what have you. So I like incorporating the atmosphere of where I am. And, you know, you could hear it in McSorley's, you know, it's just they're a rowdy crowd.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the only true way to catch the atmosphere of the Jersey Shore would have been if you had done it just in the middle of the boardwalk at Seaside Heights on a Saturday in like July, you know, and just everybody's trying to get that 99 cent slice of pizza and get on the tilt-a-whirl. In terms of what I was going to say before about the finished product was some of the material I'd heard you sort of working out early. So it was kind of like, it was almost like, oh, I got to hear the demos, or it's like, you know, Kiss Alive. This is a good way to, you know, it always comes back to Kiss whenever you talk to me. Kiss Alive, those are the versions of those songs finally realized. The first three Kiss albums, not very well produced. Some people might try to, you know, bare knuckle box you if you make that claim. But so it's like, I get to hear, this is your Kiss Alive. I know it's your No Sleep Till McSorley's, but I was like, oh, I'm getting to hear these jokes fully realized. And I do love, you know, getting to hear some of it. And while I might touch on some of the topics, I don't want you to blow any of the jokes on there. So I hope everybody checks it out, because obviously you can get the vinyl that we're talking about and showing our audience to. But it's on all the streaming services, from what I understand.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. And you could buy CDs from me at the live shows. But this is what I always make sure that I say, whatever, you know, whatever podcast I go on or radio, whatever, is, you know, you and I love the packaging, the tribute to, you know, our favorite, you know, hard rock and metal artists. But what's on the inside is for everybody to enjoy. You don't have to be a fan of hard rock and heavy metal to enjoy the comedy stylings contained therein.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I remember when you were on Who Are These Broadcasters, the single was out, and I had heard that at that point. And the single was kind of for your, that metal show, hard rock crowd, you know, that, because that dealt with Alice Cooper, a great favorite of ours. And, you know, it was like your rock track. That was the single, you know, that was your calling Dr. Love, you know, but, it's the rest of it is fairly accessible for, you know, anybody who enjoys a good laugh. And if you're checking out the Blackcast, obviously you love laughs, especially when, Don's camera froze earlier, you know, so there's so much about, you know, I think that, it was one of the things that you're talking about. And again, I don't want you to go into the joke part of it, but you talk about on the album, you talk about dating during COVID. And, you know, COVID for me was my wife and I and my two kids, you know, occasionally going outside. And I'm not going to lie, Don, I'm embarrassed when my iPhone gives me memories from like 4 years ago when we're at the beach with masks on and, you know, we're, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, it was really a wild time. But I sort of had the thing of like, oh, I'm trapped with these people. So it's a good thing that these are people that I love. But you were like, oh, this is the time I'm going to try and meet somebody new. And, you know, again, without you diving into the jokes. What legitimately I started thinking about like, oh my God, that had to be terrible in a totally different way. Right.
Yeah. Well, during COVID, what did every comedian write about and then start talking about once we were able to get back on stage? COVID. So I just said, you know, I don't want to talk, you know, I had stacks and stacks of notes about COVID. Cause what else were we doing? Nothing. So that's all you could write about. And it just like wiped 97% of it just right into the garbage can. and just kept a couple things that were very specific to me. And let's just get those out of the way. But yeah, you know, and then everything else, like much like your show, I even left mistakes on the album, you know,
right.
And, you know, horrible mess ups. We're part of, you know, keeping the rhythm of what was going on because, yes, I tape every comedian tapes multiple shows, you know, right. Some four, some six. You know, this was two shows and 97% of it's one show. And only because the other bits I forgot. So I just, you know, remembered to do them the second show and put them in. So those are really the only edits. But there's a joke on there, which I obviously thought was going to get a much bigger laugh. It did not. And then I explained to the crowd, it's okay because I can put a bigger laugh in post, which I do not do.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because you were talking about Kiss Alive earlier, and you know, a lot of our favorite live albums, not No Sleep Till Hammersmith, but a lot of our favorite live albums are pretty far from live. And you know, so I was expecting, I'm like, okay, did you go in the studio with Eddie Kramer after the fact and like, we got to add the cannon sounds that are supposed to be the fireworks, and I had a little frog in my throat, let me say that line over again. No, this is live. It's No Sleep Till McSorley's, but it's actually live. So I appreciate the live nature of it. But
We did at the end add in the applause at the end of the last show of the Taylor Swift Eras tour. that part is fake. That wasn't McSorley's, but that's right, the only edit that we made.
You know, I thought that I heard Travis Kelce clapping extra loud on an album, you know, with those huge hands of his. So yeah, that actually makes perfect sense. But It's a very modest crowd because of the size of the venue. You're like, you know, look, I mean, I get why a lot of comics will post, you know, social media clips of crowd work because they don't want to burn their material. But usually, you know, you have to really like strain to hear the people talking. These are people you're not even talking to. And they're just like, you know, they're like having a conversation with you in the middle of the show, which I think really adds to the closeness of it. I understand you filmed it too, right? So at some point we'll get to see just what this room was like. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's an important part of it is to, you know, because it literally is New York history, you know, documented, New York drinking history documented on the walls of McSorley's, you know, even go the chair that Abraham Lincoln sat in when he drank there, and you know, the wishbones up on the string where, you know, the veterans who went to World War II would, you know, put a wishbone up there. And if they came back, they broke it off. And so you knew that they, you know, they survived. So the ones that are still up there, people used to drink who didn't. So there's a million, you know, there's a million different pieces of history in there that are, you know, great visual. So, you know, people will see that. And I'll announce that a little bit more down the road after all the vinyl is sold out and I've counted all my millions. We will release the special.
Just like any great band that you and I love, they're going to take all your money. And then as soon as everybody has it, it's like, okay, well, here's another way to give it to you. You know, it's this is the 4K surround sound mix. By the way, Peg Leg Vet is in the chat. I got the alert. What have I missed? Some top-notch professionalism technology-wise, Peg Leg Vet. But we appreciate you're here. And I'm going to thank...
Let's recreate that moment for him again.
just there it is. That's really what you missed. And Peg Leg Vet, I will thank you for your service and for the cute dog as well. I was thinking that, you know, and believe me, I've heard a lot of comics talk about how, like, you know, they could have done an hour of COVID material, but you all needed to throw it away. But the other thing I was thinking about is that you don't live in the city. I think you would go in for your show fairly early on in it, but you got to live in the Jersey Shore, which it's like, well, at least you're outside. And, you know, my family and I, we spent about 6 weeks down in Orange County here in the LA area. So that's, you know, it's basically the Jersey Shore of LA, you know, because it was just like, you know.
Right. But we don't, you have the Grim Reaper Newsom out there to worry about. And, yeah. And while our governor is generally a ghoul too, we didn't have it quite as bad where we were.
But although you did, you had Chris Christie at that time, right? Who closed the beach so that he could sit there in an ill-fitting pair of sweatpants.
I venture to say any form of pants on him are going to be ill-fitting, whether he's on a beach or not. But that is the only way he can actually fit on a beach is if he closes it to the general public and then he goes out there. And then you might be able to fill in around him a little bit, but not really much. A lot of people are going to drown. It's going to be ugly. So I can't be mad at him, but McSorley's is still the place. I lived in that neighborhood, so it used to be a short stumble home afterwards. Now it's a ferry ride, but that's the one place in the city I will never stop going to. If this ever closes and becomes the dreaded Pinkberry, I will have no reason whatsoever to ever go to New York City again.
Well, before you know it, that establishment, that frozen yogurt chain, will be run out of town because they'll be asked, why does the berry have to be pink? You know, can't it choose what color it wants to be? And, it's
got to be a color fluid berry.
So the album's gotten out there, and obviously you've got plenty of gigs. I know you and Florentine have been out. Obviously people go to Don Jameson Official, or did I lie what your website is?
Don't go to the website. You know, just go on the social media. Jameson Official on Instagram and Facebook. Real Don Jameson on the X.
Yeah, sounds like somebody hasn't paid his webmaster in a while. So he's like, yeah, don't go to the website.
This is correct.
some dates I had in 2017 that nobody wants.
I jokingly plugged my Don Jameson Official on YouPorn on a Connecticut morning show last week, and we must have lost communication. But somehow suddenly I was not on the screen anymore, so I'm not sure what happened there, but
I'm sure it was an accident. Yeah Now obviously, you know, look, I wouldn't classify you as a dirty comic, but you know, you're also not Brian Regan, so you know, when and for people who don't know, I mean, you spent how many years opening for Dice?
10.
Yeah, so I obviously, you know, there's an expectation of something, but how is it doing those? You know, obviously you want to get the word out, whether you're promoting gigs or promoting albums or both, but there are some pretty infamous comics doing appearances on local morning shows. And I have a vague recollection that you told me about one that, as I'm talking now, I'm like, oh yeah, I meant to find that. Didn't you and Florentine have something really epic happen to you on one of those morning shows? Of course, we're talking about the great Jim Florentine, the one of the other thirds of that metal show on VH1 Classic.
Yes. If you go to my YouTube channel, YouTube/Don Jameson, or just Google Don Jameson and Jim Florentine, Kansas City news interview. You go out of town, like Jim and I are going to go down to Tampa tomorrow and do some shows. And likely on Friday morning, we'll be up early to do local press to, you know, plug the shows for the weekend. And, you know, after you've done, you know, two or three of them, you're exhausted, you've drank as much caffeine as you can to get through it, and you want to do something so that you can have some fun. So we figured we'd set up on the local Fox morning news, where they're all very chipper and very cheery and finally dressed. And now we lost Christian. There he is back. That we would somehow crowbar a situation into the interview, which was live, where, Jim says to the anchor, oh, you know, everything's great. I'm getting married soon. And the guy's, oh, congratulations. And he's so happy for Jim. And then I kind of say, well, he goes, what do you think? I go, well, I don't know if she's the right one. And I go on to confess that I had been having an affair with her. But I, of course, I preface it with, you know, I didn't want to have to say this on television, but.
Right. So this seems like something right out of the albums you do with Jim, the Terrorizing Telemarketers. And then I'm sorry, I noticed very quickly that there was a comment from the great Cardiff Electric, the world famous potato. No invite. If the potato wants to jump in and talk about the new Motley Crue song, I will send him the link. But I'm
you know, that the reason did not end well, by the way. We were escorted out of the building and were asked to not come back again until the next time we did, which is that one that you were about to show.
That's not the one.
That's not the one. Yeah, that got us escorted out. That was the one. That was the one after 3 years. They I guess there was new people there that didn't recognize our names. And that woman, the blonde woman that you just got a quick peek at, was looking at. She goes, "I'm looking at my notes, and it said something about there was some trouble the last time you guys were on." We're like, "No, we not there was. We came on. We had a great time."
And then I went and found the wrong clip. Oh my gosh, you know, Cardiff with the hot take here. If I talk about the new Motley Crue song, he's gonna take the stance that I think we all knew. F that, it stinks. Justice for Mick Mars, but John 5 is still cool. I think that that's a fairly universally accepted opinion for Motley Crue.
And yeah, but it stings more coming from a potato. It really does.
And by the way, Cardiff, whether we're able to get the great John Corabi to join us or not, we still need to do a show celebrating the 30th anniversary of the self-titled Motley Crue album, the lone album without Vince Neil. I'll find the right parts of the clip that I was hoping I would find for the next time you're on Who Are These Broadcasters, Don. I don't want to be spinning too many plates at once where I'm like watching clips where I'm like nodding and pretending to listen to what you're
the best saying. The best part about it is the club owner drove us there, and of course he was standing there watching the whole thing go down, and as we're being escorted down the hallway, he's like, "What are you guys doing? We're trying to get people to come to the show." There's nobody watching that goofy morning show is fans of me and Jim. All our fans are hungover. They're still asleep. It's 9:30 in the morning. Don't worry about it. And we get in the car and he turns around. And he goes, "That was pretty funny, though."
Yeah, that's true. I mean, when you think about it, it's like the people who are going to last minute decide to go to a comedy show are probably not the ones watching the local news. I can see, depending on the market, if you're doing radio, you know, that could be somebody on their way to work. And it's like, "Oh, yeah, I like these guys. I go check it out." You know, if you were in Syracuse back in the day and you did an appearance on Scorch's show, then you feel like, all right, now I'm not going to stand for this kind of talk from Comedy Tragedy. Corabi is the Gary Cherone of Motley Crue. First of all, Gary Cherone is phenomenal. I saw Extreme and Living Color, it's a couple months ago. It was fantastic. And I hadn't seen Extreme since they opened for David Lee Roth on the Skyscraper tour, I think it was. But in any case, they're phenomenal. And look, you say what you want about Van Halen 3. I almost said Motley Crue 3. See, I get distracted easily. But say what you want about Van Halen 3. Does anybody really think anything that you might not like about that was Gary Cherone coming in and like, "All right, here's the way that this band's going to operate now"?
Right.
It's also, Van Cherone.
Also, Tommy Lee actually played drums on the Motley Crue self-titled, whereas Alex Van Halen did not play drums on Van Halen 3.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't have
time. But it's a funny observation nonetheless.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And Peg Leg Vet is still being critical of the morning show in Kansas City. It's the studio responsibility to do some research. I don't know. As somebody who used to do the research for a morning show, mind your own business, right? It's there's a lot of things to do. You know, it's like, "Oh, this guy was on Crank Yankers. That's all I need to know about these two, right?" You know, it's what kind of research do I need to do? So Anyway, I'm mad that I didn't find that clip, Don. I'm not going to lie, but I'll find it. Oh, my gosh. See, now look at this. So he's just showing off now. Karabi is the Blaze Bailey of Motley Crue, which I do want to transition to talk, which I guess you have to be careful with that word in 2024. I want to move over to talk. All right. He puts Maiden in parentheses. Who do you think you're talking to, Brody? You don't have to tell us who Blaze Bailey is, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, Blaze did a couple albums with Iron Maiden, which they still do songs from.
Yeah, yeah, I know. It's it's like Bruce Dickinson's like, I mean, I guess I'll sing these, but, you know, do I have to? But so Maiden did not get admitted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it seems like they're the guys who could care the least, you know, of anybody who was on the ballot and a possible nominee. Your buddy Eddie Trunk, who I listen to almost every day, did make the point that that's one of those ones where it's like, oh, so we don't nominate Blaze Bailey, you know. Priest goes in without Ripper Owens. It's like some of these guys really keep these bands alive, you know. And the biggest tragedy of all, of course, is that Ronnie James Dio, also not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, didn't go in with Sabbath, which I believe he was still alive when Sabbath went in. So do you just not give a shit about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at this point? I mean, you could be happy for anybody you know who's like in a band. They're like, oh, you got in. That's great. You got to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like that. It's, you know, you can't, I don't get so mad at, like, you know, Mary J. Blige and Missy Misdemeanor Elliott. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know, but they've been doing this since the start. If you look at all the nominations from the beginning, they've always tried to make it as diverse as possible. The problem is when you put in Mary J. Blige and Motorhead's not in there, or Iron Maiden's not in there, or Thin Lizzy's not in there, Ronnie James Dio's, that's when I get angry, where that doesn't make any sense. It's like, oh, go ahead, put LL Cool J in. You know, but if Tone Loc gets in before Iron Maiden, there's going to be a problem.
Which, you know, I mean, you know, he has those two songs, Tone Loc. They kind of sound exactly the same. But the Wild Thing does sample Janie's Crying. So Jamie's Crying. No. Yeah. So obviously there'd at least be some rock. And I think that that sample from Tone Loc is more rock than some of these people that are getting in. You know, and there's, you know, you have to sort of like ease your expectations for what constitutes as rock. So it's like, I was never a fan of the Dave Matthews Band, but I'm like, yeah, all right, they're a rock band. They're not my kind of rock band, but sure. Yeah. And they've been at it long enough. And oh God, I have so many Facebook friends who every year when he comes into their town, they're so excited. It's their one show of the year. And I'm like, I every year I just think that much less of that person. I'm like, that's the one show you go to? Metallica was doing two nights, no repeats of the opening bands either. But
their Bong and Hacky Sack collection didn't tip you off that they might be a Dave Matthews fan?
It's true. My first year of college was 1994, and it was everybody's favorite band except me, from what it seemed like. I was like, oh, did anybody hear the new Tesla album? It's called Bust a Nut. Oh, no. So no one had heard it. Obviously, Peter Frampton's one of those ones where you're like, well, yeah, why wasn't he there already? Foreigner. That's sort of the, you know, the direct result of the guy from Rolling Stone, Jan Wenner, like not being allowed to participate anymore because I guess he had like a reverse hard on for bands like them and Boston and REO Speedwagon. He's like, oh, none of that corporate rock's going to get in. Oh, but let's put the MC5 in, even though literally like 5-6 times no one voted for them, or not enough people voted for them. And I know that they're a huge influence, the MC5, but it's like, once you say the words Kick Out the Jams, I'm out of MC5 songs. I couldn't even begin to tell you another one. And I'm not going to lie, Don, I know Kick Out the Jams more because that band Presidents of the United States of America had a single that was a cover of it. That's really the one I've heard more often back 25 years ago or so.
I think Lump is also a cover of an MC5 song. She's Lump. She's Lump.
Yeah.
Well, she kicked out the jams.
Yeah. Well, I think that Lump was, you know, some chick who was all strung out actually at St. Mark's Place, just waiting for another hit. And Comedy tragedy again. Beyonce will be in the Country Music Hall of Fame before Dio and Maiden get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'll tell you what, Beyonce will get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame probably before some of those. You know, and they can't get some of these people in close enough, quickly enough. Dionne Warwick is going in, and I think people didn't even get to vote for her. She's like, there's like this, you know, and look, it's the way that Priest got in, I think, last year. That they put Dionne Warwick in, and it's like, is it just because they're hoping that they get like an all-star rendition of That's What Friends Are For? I'm like, that's the only reason you put Dionne Warwick in, you know?
Oh, you have no idea the power of the Psychic Friends Network and the influence that they hold over the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I hope her induction is done by Miss Cleo. You know, I think that would be the, you know, she should certainly, you know, go in there.
Right. Well, one of her peers should induct her. Correct.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But before we move off of it, obviously the big one going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame this year is Ozzy as a solo artist. He's already in as a part of Black Sabbath. You know, you're, again, I reference your buddy Eddie Trunk talking about how the real disservice will be that, you know, Ozzy's speech, however it's delivered, he's not going to thank all the people that made Ozzy the solo artist the success that it was. You know, I mean, maybe if Zach's there in the audience, he'll point to him, but there's a lot of politics when let's just say someone in that Osborne household creates a lot of drama around anything to do with him. We can be excited for Ozzy, but it's also like, we're not going to really get I guess Randy Rhoads got sort of in on that bachelor category, but it's, ever since the moment when Howard Stern had, I think, just Sharon in studio, and Howard asked Sharon about "Mama, I'm Coming Home," and she said, "Oh yeah, Ozzy wrote that song for me, but Lemmy wrote that song, and let's hope he didn't write it for you. Otherwise, I mean, now that would have been a great episode of that stupid reality show that I know you and I have talked about, the episode where Ozzy comes home and he finds Lemmy just laying out on the couch with his feet off and a Jack and Coke, you know?
Yeah, in his Daisy Dukes.
But what do you think when you hear about Ozzy getting in as a solo artist and you know, Dio still not getting in at all? I mean, it's obvious. There's obvious comparisons between the two. That's sort of what I was thinking.
Yeah, no, of course. But listen, you know, with Tom Morello and Eddie Trunk now on the nominating board, it's only a matter of time. And now that they've figured out this, we keep saying that they backdoor it, but it's a musical excellence induction. But yeah, they're backdooring them in because they know they deserve to be in there. So, you know, I think Dio will come sooner than later, especially with those two guys beating that drum over and over again. And, you know, apparently they're going to start inducting some TV shows in, some music TV shows. So, you know, you never know. Might be able to add another accolade to my list at some point. And and listen, if they even go so far as to put podcasts in there, trust me, between myself and Eddie and Tom and everybody at the Psychic Friends Network, we will make sure there was a huge push for the Bladcast.
Well, I appreciate that. And by the way, if Cop Rock gets in next year, I'm going to fly out for the ceremony. I think its time has come that we finally get that. I've thought about not putting up this comment from Peg Leg Vet, but it did make me laugh. One of my only childhood memories is that my dad played a Dionne Warwick 8-track all the time. I'm sure that I J-O'd over that pick of it many times. Brody comes back in. There's no hope for Dokken and Rat. What, that Peg Leg Vet is going to jerk off to Dokken and Rat? No, that's probably going to happen.
Yeah, or the first Poison album, which is my preference. But
yeah. Oh yeah. No. Only on the first album. I don't want to see the pictures of them on the second album. You know.
Can your crack team over there pull up said picture that was J-O'd to?
So you want me to find a Dionne Warwick 8-track?
Because I can actually, believe it or not, vaguely picture it in my mind. I believe she does. She's in a sexy long gown. Maybe I'm thinking of my last album cover.
Maybe you're thinking of Donna Summers. And meanwhile, you're asking about my crack team when you know that I'm my crack team. So this is not what you're talking about. Peg Leg Vet does say that mouth. So maybe
the 8-track format just turned him on.
Oh yeah.
Not necessarily the photo.
Yeah, I know. Speaking of 8-track, I know you know the guys in Cheap Trick, and I forget how many years ago it was, but they put out an album on 8-track just so that they could be number one on some format when it came out, which I think Robin was on with Dennis Miller explaining that, because he sent us the 8-track, and Dennis kept it. You think I didn't want that Cheap Trick 8-track, Don?
I still kept a few that, you know, they're now on display as artwork because I have nothing to listen to it on. But I think I have Alice Cooper, Billion Dollar Babies. I have Kiss the Originals. There's one more I can't think of.
No Sleep Till McSorley's available on 8-track?
I'm in discussions with Metal Blade on an 8-track. And we're coming to terms with it. We're going to see. It's a great idea. But
could you imagine if you texted Slagle like, "Hey, I need to call you. It's really important." And he said, "I really want my album to be out on 8-track."
Yeah, I know you're renegotiating Cannibal Corpse's contract, but this matters. Yeah, let's bump this up on the priority list.
Right. Exactly. I'm showing the 8-track was a format that my mom liked. So a lot of times when I'll talk to musicians, you know, I'll ask them about, you know, their influences and some of the stuff they grew up listening to. And I talk about how what you grew up listening to doesn't always shape what you listen to. Yeah. So this is that image of Dionne Warwick, which you clearly, you were thinking about this when he mentioned it. And maybe this is what he was talking about. And Peg Leg is explaining that he used the 8-track sleeve. Thanks for being here, Peg Leg. Reel to reel. You know what, Brody? That's just ridiculous. All right. I mean, 8-track is a viable format. But I always talk about how I remember my mom had two 8-tracks. She had Barry Manilow's Greatest Hits and John Denver's Greatest Hits. And yet I still ended up having a real appreciation for quality music and rock and roll a little bit later. So did you ever get into 8-tracks or because they just seem like such a bad format, you know?
Well, let's just say that right now in the past 60 seconds, Peg Leg is not the only one who has J-O'd to this 8-track tape. I'm done now. You can take it down.
Yeah, look at the set of Dionne's on Warwick. I mean, there's obviously something to take a look at there.
Yeah, well, when you're a kid, that's, you know, that was our porn. Like, but like I say on No Sleep Till McSorley's, the Queen album Jazz came with the poster of the 80 naked women riding bicycles, and that was certainly J-O material.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'd settle for the Sears catalog, and I was like, I'm gonna get an early start on my Christmas list. I'm gonna just go into my room and lock the door while I look at. Oh my God, Peg Leg and I look at us at the same time, thinking of the same thing. And Peg Leg, if you don't smash that like button, like they say, and subscribe, I will be very hurt. We appreciate it. I don't want to keep you too much longer, Don, but when you were kind enough to have me on your show, that Jameson show, a number of times, and
rest in peace.
I pour one out to the Jameson show. I got to be a guest on the final episode, which I was not there in studio. So I explained, there's a select group of people when I say like, oh yeah, no, I was on Jameson's final show. He was in studio with Bill Schultz and Gino Bisconti. And they're like, okay, so you didn't talk at all. I was like, I had to shout a little bit, but I was honored to be a part of that. But
and I was grateful that they were both done working by 3 p.m. and decided that they would spend the next 4 hours at Sullivan's across the street where you have been with me. You know, just kicking back and having a few Shirley Temples before they came on. So it was a little rowdy, but we had fun.
Yeah, no, it was fun. And one of the things that when I would be on, I would always send you somewhere between 20 and 30 rock news stories. And we'd get to like three of them, but I always wanted to be prepared. One of the ones I wanted to talk about is, again, like it always comes back to Kiss. And this one's from Blabbermouth. So this Gene Simmons band that goes out in the past when there would be a Gene Simmons band. I think the only holdover from that iteration is Brent Woods, but they would play some like really deep songs in Kiss's catalog, which it's like, if you're going to see the Gene Simmons band, you should be a really big fan of Kiss, because I don't know who else it's for. But the set list shocked me, no pun intended for Ace, because it's like
a bunch. It did not make you feel better.
No, it did not make me feel better. I'm like, oh, that's kind of fun doing, Ace of Spades. But it's like all these Kiss songs that like Kiss. Look, Kiss had the same set list for the past 5 years. And among the songs that they did as the Gene Simmons band is I Was Made for Loving You, a song that Gene has gone on record to say he hates that song. What do you think this is? Is it just like, oh, well, Kiss isn't out, so now I'm going to, you know, go ahead and play like all these Kiss standards that people are going to really want to see. And I'm not saying don't play any of them, but I mean, you know.
All right, I'll say it. Don't play any of them.
Okay.
But to take a cue from Comedy Tragedy, I think his name is, Gene is the Vince Neil of Kiss. which is the second they played their last Kiss played their last show, 48 hours later, he was in Brazil with a solo band playing music, which is what Vince was always famous for with Motley. They would get off tour after a year and he would be playing a club in Seattle the next day. So, but at least, yeah, with Vince, you would get some different stuff from the normal Motley set. You would get Vince songs. I see, you know, Gene doesn't like I Was Made for Loving You. I get it with Kiss fans. It's a divisive song, but it is their biggest song ever. Yet he includes his song, the famous Are You Ready? Gene Simmons song that people have been clamoring to hear live forever. And that would, you know, that would have been worth the trip all the way to Brazil just to hear Are You Ready, Gene Simmons song, much like The Vault, which that concept I always loved, $50,000. So an old Jewish guy in a sparkly outfit could deliver you a box of songs too crappy for a Kiss album.
Yeah, I believe that I don't know that Are You Ready song, but I believe it's from his solo album that was called Asshole, which it's the one time that there was truth in advertising with something associated with Gene. And I find Gene hugely entertaining, his persona.
Same thing. But this set list is a disgrace.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, when he used to play with the other guys, you know, who became Ace's band.
Right.
And I think are still Ace's band. They would trick Gene into playing deep stuff by saying, "Hey Gene, Charisma off of Dynasty. It goes like this, right?" And they would play it incorrectly on purpose. So Gene would have to go, "No, that is not correct. This is how you play Charisma." And then they go, "Stop playing." And they would kick into it and then they get done. And Gene would go, "Oh, that sounded pretty good." And they would play it. I don't, that was a very weak attempt at a Gene impression there. It was half a Howard Stern's father.
I was just going to say it was Ben Gene. Stern.
Yeah.
Paul, you need proper modulation. Ace, I told you not to be stupid, you moron.
Peter, shut up, sit down.
Yeah, it's disappointing because there's some great songs, and you know, Chris Jericho has that band Quarantine that they take all these Kiss 80s like album tracks and you know, have way more success with them than Kiss ever did. There's some really good songs in there. You know, I grew up, Kiss had the makeup off, but I think that even an album like Hot in the Shade that has like five songs too many, there's still some good songs on all of them, but they're like, well, we don't want to play that. We're going to play, we're going to do a cover of Communication Breakdown, you know? And I don't know why he's doing covers. You know, you have so many great songs that are your own, you know?
Yeah, true. But Kiss in the, you know, in the early days used to do a lot of covers. I mean, I have old Kiss bootlegs where they did Zeppelin, where they'd done The Who, The Beatles. So they actually used to do covers back in the day. But yes, in this context, there's absolutely, I would much rather have, you know, Charisma in there. I'd rather hear A World Without Heroes. You know, I'd rather have, you know, what are some other deep Gene?
I mean, look, I would take Burn Bitch Burn, you know? I mean, that's a Gene song from Animalize, you know? It's not even a great song, but I'm like, hey, I didn't think I'd ever hear it live. And Comedy Tragedy is saying, let's get The Elder start to finish.
Well, that would be Comedy and Tragedy.
Yeah, exactly. And he says Unmasked has no good songs. Perhaps you've never heard Shandy, the song that's a huge hit in Australia, which they legitimately were still playing in Australia early last year because the song actually charted. Anyway, I don't know. I'm excited at the idea of this band, but when I found out it wasn't like the band that now, like you said, is Ace's band, I was like, oh, I kind of thought I was going to get some. Yeah, you know, it's just stuff from the solo album. I'm talking the 78 solo album. I mean, Ace went out and did his entire 78 solo album a couple years ago, which was fantastic. I mean, just do that, Gene.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. But you play Radioactive, you know, play Tunnel of Love. I mean, all those songs, but you put that in the set list. I mean,
yeah,
that's almost the exact same set list as Kiss played for the last, you know. I mean, I saw that in year five of the final tour. That set list.
Yeah. I mean, play Almost Human. I mean, there's so many great songs. Yeah. That
Faster Caster. Come on, Gene.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Gene, I know you're watching. Come on. And Gene never threw a drink in your face, right? Gene doesn't have an axe to grind with you, does he?
No, he does not. I've never had a problem with Gene. I got to meet him one time at the Gene Simmons roast. That was included in his Family Jewels show because I wrote for it. And it was kind of nice knowing I wrote 25 pages of just the most awful stuff about him. And he had no idea. So when he met me and shook my hand, he had no idea he was shaking the hand of a guy who helped his verbal destruction.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's it's just like, nice to meet you. I did meet him once. We were doing Dennis Miller's podcast, and it was like in studio. We were like, I was there with him, and I didn't expect. I made him laugh because I talked about Captain Crunch having stolen valor, which will tell you why that podcast never took off. But he laughed so hard at it. I was like, all right. I mean, what's going to be better the rest of my life? Really, like it was a legitimate laugh from Gene. You know, it wasn't one of his jokes. Like, you know, we have the Kiss condom and the Kiss coffin. We've got you coming and going.
Yes.
Just a couple more stories before I let you go, because Gene's always talking about how rock is dead. And he says that usually when he's got, you know, a CBD brand or an alcohol, you know, some kind of alcoholic product, none of which he uses, but he's happy to put his name on. Usually that's when he says rock is dead. Ian Hill from Priest was talking about people been trying to kill heavy metal now for 35, 40 years. I think he's not wrong, but I feel like metal and rock seem to be doing all right. You seem to know newer bands more than I do, Don. And I'm not talking about, you know, some of the death metal, but who do you feel is the kind of band that can really help both rock and metal, you know, kind of at least get another 10 years? I'm not talking about last forever. Let's just see where we are in 2034, Don.
Well, I'm going to go with the Gene model here and say rock is heavy metal is dead. Unless you buy my new album, No Sleep Till McSorley's, and then you can single-handedly save heavy metal by buying this album.
That's actually the only, that's the only way to save it, Don. It
literally is the only way. But yeah, I guess Ian Hill must have some CBD oil he's selling. It ebbs and flows, you know. I mean, it's, but that's what it is. We, you know, we get mad when the bands we love get too popular because you're like, oh, that's our band. Now it's everybody's band. It's not as much fun anymore. And then when they don't get popular, they, you go, why didn't they get more popular? So, you know, it's a catch 22. But yeah, there's a whole bunch of, there's tons of bands out there, you know, doing good things. I mean, you got, you know, you got bands like Lamb of God and Mastodon, you know, they're out there. They're pretty much now at an arena level, you know, bands like that. So, you know, there's, the scene is pretty healthy. You got Avenged Sevenfold. There's, you know, they're still big. Greta Van Fleet, you know, brings a lot of people. They sell a lot of tickets. So like them or not, you know, that's the next kind of generation of bands. But there's not, we're never going to have big arena and stadium acts anymore because it's just no, you know, the bands that have household name songs, there's no, but there's no system for that anymore. There's no system for anybody to have an Enter Sandman anymore because it's just, you know, radio, rock radio's dead in this country, you know? So that, there's no way to get a mass audience like you used to be able to.
Well, you could get a mass audience if you happen to be one of the songs on Dark Side of the Moon that still get played on classic rock radio like 8 times a day. You know, that's really that's the sweet spot for some of those. But yeah, no, it's obviously a bunch of people talk about the fact that, you know, these classic artists put out new albums, some of them very good. We talked about Cheap Trick earlier. It seems like every year, maybe two, they put out what consistently feel like really good albums. But speaking of albums, Peg Leg Vet has a really important question. When will we be able to download the album? So he doesn't want vinyl. He doesn't want CD. I actually bought it. I showed you. I showed proof on social media. That's how I got you to agree to be on and be part of the Media World Tour.
I always ask for receipts from my interviewers.
Yeah, I bought it on Apple Music. I was going to call it iTunes. Boy, I would look like a boomer. So you can get it now, right? You can just buy it wherever you buy your music.
Yeah, you can get it on your Discman. You can get it on your iPod. It's available now for streaming. Spotify, Apple Music. I'm like you, I prefer Apple Music. That's a place. It's probably on Pandora. It is out officially now, and the vinyl's available for pre-order. So, and I'm doing that through Matt Sorum's company, Experience Vinyl. So if you go over to experiencevinyl.com, you can pre-order the light and or dark ale versions of the record.
Really, you should get both. I mean, obviously, just like if you're sitting at McSorley's long enough, you want to have a little bit of the light, but mostly stick with Peg Leg Vet is so polite. He just says thanks, you know. So I'm enamored of him. But
appreciate his service to the country and to my streaming sales.
Right, exactly. No Sleep Till McSorley's is the big album, and everybody should go out and get it.
Yeah.
Before too long. So the final thing I wanted to talk to you about, and I was going to start this way, but then you froze up and I got confused. So, as we're talking, all the times that I would do your show in person, I wanted to wear, this shirt for a place called Rock Fantasy in Middletown, New York, because that was my hard rock and heavy metal place. I had to drive like a half an hour to go there, but the guy who ran it, Steve, still there sometimes. He knew everything, and he knew I liked Alice Cooper, so he'd like put stuff aside sometimes. He's like, oh, look at this poster I got. He thought I also liked King Diamond, and I was like, I'm 14, you know, talk to me in like 5 more years, maybe I'll get in on it. So for me, like, that was the place where, like, you know, it had the guy who ran it, who remembered me, my buddy who came in, my buddy Dan, who, you know, we came to see you in Princeton at that prom night. His favorite band still is Faster Pussycat. So it's like, oh yeah, Faster Pussycat didn't put out a lot of albums, but he's like, oh, I got a new radio single, you know, with a B-side. So yeah. I think that those people are so important. And now obviously there's not even really that much physical music. Was there a place for you growing up that was like, oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd go wherever to get a new album, but was there like, oh, I trust this person to know what I like. And if they say, hey, I think you might like this band Iron Maiden, that I will trust them, you know?
Yes, that was the guy with the long hair in the record store at the Ocean County Mall, New Jersey, because that's, you know, that's who you look for. You look for the guy with the long hair that worked at the record store. He's the guy that's going to know the rock stuff and the heavy music. And I would take my lawn mowing money that I got on the weekend, and then I would go on Sunday to the mall, and I'd find the long haired dude. And he was the guy that gave me a Motorhead Bomber.
Nice.
So he was one for one right there. Then he suggested Anvil Hard and Heavy, which was their first album. So
which again, by the way, truth in advertising, Anvil being both hard and heavy. You know, they're not messing around there.
No, they lay it out. They're nice Canadian boys. They don't lie. And then the third one, not only did he recommend this as highly as the other two, he gave me the option that if I didn't like it, that I could break it into little pieces and bring it back, and he would give me my money back out of his own pocket. And that album was Riot Fire Down Under.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow.
And that record is very much still intact and on my turntable more often than not. For people who don't know Riot Fire Down Under, one of the most classic metal albums of all time. Crazy story with that band. They should have been much more. They should have been bigger. But that's a story for another exciting Black
Cast. The next Black Cast. By the way, the great Hack Ride popping in. I'm a fucking psychic. Faster Pussycat called it. I told him that in a message. He was trying to make fun of me once about like, oh, and all you like is Faster Pussycat. I met my first girlfriend at a Faster Pussycat concert at the Ritz in 1993, Don. So they were not my favorite band.
Unfortunately, it was Tame Me Down.
Yeah.
And you approached him from behind.
But he looked like a 15-year-old girl in those days. So that's how he was able to trick me. Because the chat has been so great and so involved, Don, on the way out. David wants to know, do you like Wigwam and similar Nordic metal with an 80s sound? Now, Wigwam rose to prominence because they had this song, Do You Want to Taste It? That was the theme song to the John Cena superhero show Peacemaker. There was an elaborate video that went with it. They're sort of like Steel Panther. I don't know if you know Wigwam at all.
I do. Yeah, I've seen them actually.
They're a little bit less on the nose. You know, I like Steel Panther is definitely playing up the comedy aspect of it. They're more like, oh, these songs could have come out in 91. So what are your thoughts on bands like Wigwam? He's telling me it's Wigwam. But maybe that's how they say it. He also lives in Jersey, actually. David does. But what do you?
He lives in the Nordic. He lives in the Nordic area,
right?
New Jersey. I know there's a band called Crazy Licks. These guys, they Wigwam and Crazy Licks have both been on the Monsters of Rock cruise. So that's how I know from them. But I don't know. I sort of, it's a little too in the middle for me. I kind of like, you know, I Steel Panther takes it to the next level, where it's so obviously humorous and you know, a little tongue in cheek. Yeah, they're a little bit more like if, you know, if we wrote songs in the 80s, this is what it would be. Right. So yeah, not my favorite thing. I got to be honest with comedy tragedy. He's been such a good contributor here. Not my thing, but very fun people to drink with. as I alluded to earlier in the Bladcast, those crazy Nords know how to have a good time.
And at the end of the day, it matters almost as much, if not more, than their musical abilities, because. Hack Ride came in with this. I want to get this. I said that was the last question, but he wants to know if you know anything about Carnivool, Australia's Tool, and the best band from outside American rock for the last 30 years. That's the first I've ever heard of Carnivool. Hack Ride, if you don't know him, is a demon, actually. And so obviously he keeps up on a lot of the same music that we would like. But I do believe that he lives down under, but not the Australian down under, the fiery one where Orenthal James Simpson recently had a change of address to, that down under.
Yes.
Is that a band that you know, Don?
I am now owning their album Asymmetry on Apple Music. You see how easy that is? And people could do that with No Sleep Till McSorley's. You see how quickly I did that while I ignored Christian? I now own Carnivool, and the next time I come on, I will be prepared to discuss Carnivool. It appears that they also have a new video from 2021. And there's even a this is even better, Carnivool Essentials. That's the one to go with, since I don't know them.
As long as they don't sound anything like the Kiss album, Carnivool of Souls. And yes, I spent a lot of time thinking about whether or not I was going to actually say that.
Yes, while you were ignoring what I was saying, you came up with that clever line.
Yeah, and David's saying Dynasty. And look at this. Now, Hackride and Brody, you guys follow each other because he likes Carnivool. Don, I can't thank you enough for being on the Blackcast today. I don't get a lot of number one album sellers on the show. I did talk to Don McLean once, but other than him, I think you're the only other one. So
us Dons have to stick together. Us number one Dons got to stick together. And I appreciate it. If I'm a betting man, with this appearance and the response from the two chatters that joined us, my album will be right back up on the charts the minute this airs.
This is what we in the business refer to as the Blackcast bump. You went up initially because of the Who Are These Broadcasters bump, and then you're going to get the Blackcast bump, which not to be confused with another kind of bump that, again, we don't have time to talk about. Don Jameson, give all the socials again for anybody who jumped in the last few minutes.
Yes, and thank you, Hellride.
Hackride. Don't misname him. He'll take much for you to end up on his list.
I've dead named him, and I feel ashamed. I can only imagine his gender. Don Jameson Official on Instagram and Facebook. Real Don Jameson on the X.
And, of course, I'm at Christian DMZ. Yeah, I can't let go of the dream, all right? One day, Dennis Miller is going to do a radio show again, and I'll be glad I kept that name. At Christian DMZ. Subscribe to the Blackcast, Bladtcast. And Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the Who Are These Podcasts YouTube channel. Who Are These Broadcasters, which also is available as an audio podcast. But we show a lot of videos, so you should watch it on YouTube. But you can get it the other way, too, all right? Everybody wins. Thanks again to Don Jameson. That's all the time we have for now. We'll see you next time on The Blackcast.
Thank you for listening to The Blackcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Blackcast. That's Bladtcast. You can also subscribe to the audio version wherever podcasts are found. I'm Farad Muhammad, and if you want me to voice your podcast intro, you can find me at Twitter and Instagram at FARDMUHAMMAD.
We'll see you next time on KissOnline.com and The Blackcast.
Yes, and my screen is totally frozen, but if it's working on your end,
I can hear you. But yes, your visual is frozen. Yeah.
My visual is frozen. And so what's the best? Should I exit out and come back and tell you this fantastic story?
Yeah, why don't we try that? And if it stays frozen, it's got that mug on there that America's already falling in love with. So momentarily, we'll be.
I don't even know if I can. Oh boy, now I'm getting the pinwheel of death. Oh my God, is this live? Are we off the rails already?
This one is live because I wanted to interact with the chat. I wanted them to see all this.
Well, they're seeing all of it.
They're seeing a lot of Don right now, but we can hear you fine, you know. And ultimately, this is a podcast, so true. We can Why don't we let you tell the story and see if it corrects itself during it? But it'll probably be the exact opposite. You know, we've lost.
I would be prepared to vamp right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Why don't you know what I'll do? I'll kick you out of the studio and then you can jump back in on the same link. Momentarily, we'll be talking more with the great Don Jameson, who, as we were talking about his album, No Sleep Till McSorley's, is available now on vinyl. I believe there's also CDs if for those of you like me who like to get things the old-fashioned way, and that's the newfangled way on CD, digital, and all that good stuff. But we're going to have a great tale about the times at McSorley's that led to the album of the same name. And this is a good time to let everybody know that if you want to subscribe to the Bladtcast, our YouTube channel, spelled the same way as the audio podcast, Bladtcast, the Bladtcast, that is where you can find me on YouTube and obviously wherever you find audio podcasts as well. Excited to welcome back to the show the great Don Jameson. How are you, sir?
Hey, you know what happened was I was sitting in McSorley's Ale House having a pint or seven, as you've alluded to. Of course, if you took the over on the seven pints, you would have made a lot more money.
Welcome to the party, pal!
But it wasn't even my joke. Christian Blatt said that on my show. Christian Blatt's right. Never funny. He said that one thing, and John could not let it go.
I like Christian, but you are
I
right.
I love Christian. Sir, how do you feel about doing a show co-hosted by Christian Blatt?
Yeah.
I don't know who Christian Blatt is, but I'm down.
The Bladtcast. Will you be watching the Who Are These Broadcasters halftime show on the WATP YouTube channel now?
All right, Christian, everybody else at Bladtcast. I don't know what that is.
Naughty.
I like the idea that somewhere there's going to be people that are, you know, fans of Who Are These Broadcasters that are at a party where people don't know what that is. Mm-hmm. And they're like, hey, real quick, I'm going to put on Eric Zane and Christian Blatt. No, you don't understand. Tukey and Lucy Tightbox are on.
Christian Blatt, I suspect, might be calling your mother, but not 100%. I mean, he did tweet something on Mother's Day. He tweeted something about moms. So I'm assuming that's what he meant. You know, I would start looking into Christian Blatt. Blatt it. I don't know. Nobody knows how to say it.
It's the eye of the tiger. It's the thrill of the night. Rising up to the challenge of arrival.
Hello. I'm Conrad Bain.
You're a talker. You're like the worst broadcaster ever.
Well, this has been the Bladtcast. You can find me at Christian DMZ.
The Bladtcast is 100% right.
The Bladfest, the Bladtcast.
The Bladtcast.
And this is a good time to let everybody know that if you want to subscribe to the Bladtcast, our YouTube channel, spelled the same way as the audio podcast.
One of the best podcasts you can ever see, the Bladtcast. Whoop-dee-doo, we're watching it. We got no Wi-Fi. We can't hear a thing, but we love it.
Go watch the Bladtcast.
Good luck with the whole thing. And, you know, here's to another 500. Gets you to 1,000, you know, which is more than 500 last time I checked.
Totally forgot. I am doing the Bladtcast tomorrow.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye.
We're closed.
That was not my fault.
Tukey loves you all more than a friend.
I love Tukey.
Yay! Hacka, hacka!
I'm so excited!
Try anything and you cancel, bro.
What are bells?